This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald.
I'm Ramya Muthan, and you're about to embark on the complete Kelly and Company podcast experience.
It's full octane Kelly and Ramya with all the fixins.
Live from the Accessible Media Studios, this is Kelly and Company. Entertainment, lifestyle, and great conversation. It's AMI Audio's on-air community, and everyone's invited. And now, the big man himself, Kelly McDonald.
And it is the middle of the month, as a matter of fact, the 15th, and it's kind of like that all day, which means it's someone's birthday all day, Rummy.
Woohoo! Yes, it is.
Big shout out.
She's a good friend of ours.
Was here yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
We spoke to her twice because we had a meeting with her early in the day. So it's like that she was with us all day, keeping us company. So hopefully people are doing that today for Margaret Weldon, our In the Know contributor who comes on here every second Wednesday. And Margaret yesterday just gave so many really shout outs and tips of the fedora, if she wore one like I do, to so many of our contributors and segments on the show. That was really classic cross promotion. We appreciate it because, you know, we've got so many great people doing great work on the show. But I digress, Ramya. Back to her birthday, since it is her day.
Yeah, it is. She just casually mentioned we remembered. I mean, you, of course, have known her forever.
That doesn't mean I remembered better.
Yeah.
I've generally forgot forever. That's good. I think she knows that because she's known me forever. So she knows, yeah, this guy can't be bothered to remember any birthdays. And it's not a bother. They slide out. Then others come out of nowhere. Like, I know someone's is June 4th. It's just a figuring out who.
Aww. Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah, we don't know yet.
Well, you might. I don't know. I mean, with a better memory.
I didn't mean to act all sentimental with that date or anything.
It's like you connected to it. It's as if it meant something to you. Anyway, Mags, do have a great day. And to anyone out there celebrating a birthday, as we really should wish all of you every day, but then that would take away from the special days. It is a special day on your day, and hopefully you're having a great one, and the best to you. Let's see what's coming up today on this edition of Kelly and Company. Gardener Susan Kearney lets us know how to take care of our turf this time of year and shares more tips on spring garden cleanup.
All right. On April 15, 2020, which is Margaret's birthday last year, Canada Takeout introduced the very first National Takeout Day in support of Canada's restaurant industry. And since then, Takeout Day has evolved into a national weekly food holiday as well as an annual holiday. And we're going to learn more about this with Chef Trevor Newey.
Plus, provide Margaret Weldon an excuse to do takeout today.
Why not?
Mm-hmm. On Curious Minds, Christine Malick highlights for us cross-cultural learning and shares how one blind woman is making connections happen across cultures. We'll have that conversation in hour two of the program. I'd like to get to a food recall off the top, ladies and gentlemen. This is due to allergy, sulfites, product, Thai elephant brand, black tiger shrimp. Recalling firm, solid trading, and the distribution for this is Ontario and Quebec. So if you are into those tiger shrimp, please take them back. Certainly, you may not want to be eating them. And what we love to do when people give us a call at 1-866-509-4545 and give us permission to do so and mention that it's for Kelly and Company, we like to play their voice messages. Let's say hi to Jackie.
Hey, it's Jackie Pollock calling in from Cumberland, Ontario. Hey, Kel, how are ya? It's been 19 years since my mom died. It'll be 19 years on the 26th of April, and it's still a hard time. So I'm kind of having a downtime today. But seeing Margaret Weldon on your show kind of gives me a lift, gives me the lift I needed in you. So thanks for that. And as far as books go, I got 349 volumes and 52 books altogether. And there's more coming. Your listeners, if they might want to try the Isaac Asimov Foundation series or his robot novels or Star Trek. I personally, if I read novels, like the original, it was Captain Kirk.
Awesome, Jackie. Thank you. And some people might want to get into those. I remember hearing of those, and I think I may have even read some of the Isaac Asimovs. Years ago. First of all, we know Jackie will be sending Margaret a birthday wish today as well. Jackie, knowing Margaret for many moons as well. And, you know, when you know, Jackie, when it makes us feel good to know that when you are having that time, that struggle, that it's nice to hear the show, be a part of it. And 19 years, and I'm sure at times it feels just like yesterday. So, of course, our hearts go out to you, too, and knowing that. But, Rum, we see that's a wonderful thing. If you have something that helps out a little bit, obviously, we certainly can't replace. We all will experience that loss. And hopefully there are those things that we find that that do help.
Yeah, absolutely, Kels. I mean, it's really important to remember that today is today. Tomorrow will be different. And yesterday was hard. And this time around, it feels like a lot of days are hard for a lot of us. But just to kind of get through the day and lift yourself up moment by moment, get together with people on a virtual level, but just, you know, create those networks and hold on to the communities that you're involved with. And whether that's podcast community, arts communities, or some kind of physical wellness communities, there's lots of ways to just remember that you're not the only one who's going through some hard times.
As we talked about on the show yesterday, folks, outlets, and everyone's going through a really difficult time now to begin with, not to mention the other things in our lives. And I know those connections. I know that feeling, Jackie, too, is with both of my parents being gone. So I'm glad that we're part of that for you in the sense of, you know, being, we're very honored. Would you, Rum, please talk a little bit about our book of the month?
Absolutely. The book of the month this month is called There, There, and it's by Tommy Orange. It's recommended to us by Danielle McLaughlin, our Know Your Rights contributor. Kelly, you got into the book, so curious to hear about your thoughts, but this is a bestseller from 2018. A little bit about the book. Jackie Redfeather is newly sober and trying to make it time to, back to the family that she left behind in shame in Oakland. And Dean Oxrene is pulling his life together after his uncle's death and has come to work the powwow and to honor his uncle's memory. Edwin Frank has come to find his true father. Bobby Big Medicine has come to drum the grand entry. Opal Viola Victoria Bearshield has come to watch her nephew, Orville Redfeather. And Orville has taught himself Indian dance through YouTube videos, and he's come to the big Oakland powwow to dance in public for the very first time. Tony Loneman is a young Native American boy who's future seems destined to be as bleak as his past, and he's come to the powwow with some darker intentions mm-hmm. that'll destroy the lives of everyone in his path. Wow. Seems like a really strong book, a lot of characters, and this is going to be, we're going to be talking about this on April 27th, so a bit of time for you guys to get into it. It's available on Sela.
I will say the Oakland Coliseum, ladies and gentlemen, and some of the thoughts and that and reflections in there really reached out to me as I'm reading through the book. So really, really poignant. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to slip out of here. But yesterday we talked a lot about vaccines on the program. Mick Jagger and Dave Grohl have teamed up on a hard rock pandemic anthem called Easy Sleazy. Jagger says the song is about the difficulties of lockdown restrictions and social distancing, as well as the hope of a better future once vaccines are administered and the lockdown actually ends. So really interesting that this anthem is out at the time of what we've really been talking a lot on the show about. This is Jagger and Grohl performing Easy Sleazy here on Kelly and Company. Coming up next on the program, Mike Fair will start a series on accessible journaling apps. Today, we start with the Day One app in a moment. Back, it's Kelly and Company. Rumya Muth and Kelly McDonald, hosts of the program. Please, if you want to email the network, find anything out about AMI Tele, AMI TV, AMI Audio, or Accessible Media Inc., you can do it feedback@ami.ca. You can also check out the Accessible Media Inc. Facebook page if that's more something you're a little more comfortable with. That's always good. That's okay. And you can reach out to Rumya or myself, and you can do it on Twitter. She's at All Rams with a Z, and I'm at AMI Kelly Mack. Love to hear from you. Ramya Muthan, my co-host. As mentioned, I'm Kelly McDonald.
And on Thursday, we like to check in with our friend Mike Fear. He brings a diverse bunch of conversations here. Let's bring him on.
Hi, I'm Mike Fear. iPhones, iPods, and iPads are everywhere, and they're doing great things for the blind. We explore all that, plus audio entertainment, dramas, podcasts, internet radio, and games. We share it all on Kelly and Company.
We're talking a lot about mental health and wellness with Mike Fear. Also, he's always tributing different things. And in his own exploration of mental wellness apps, the practice of journaling kept coming up for Mike. And over the next 3 weeks, Mike's going to tell us a little bit about some accessible journaling apps which offer different tools to help with the practice and his experiences using all of it. So, Mike, first of all, let's talk about what journaling actually is. Can you tell us what this means?
Yeah, it's a bit of a tossed around term, and a lot of people will use it for different things. Basically, the idea of journaling is different from, say, blogging, which is more public. Journaling is usually done sort of in private for your own consumption or maybe for others, in later times, but not right away. And so it's a private act of writing. And it basically, the idea is systematically writing down your thoughts and documenting either your life or your ideas, your moods, all that kind of stuff can help you keep organized in terms of just and keep a mental balance more because you're concentrating, you're thinking through. A lot of us sort of go through our lives quickly and we sort of get absorbed in our thoughts and we don't really take the time to step back and really think about, okay, how am I doing? What kind of thoughts am I thinking? Right. I mean, we've tweeted stuff that we've later thought, oh, how did I just think that, So this kind of it gets you to pause and really consciously be aware of what's in your mind and think it through.
Mike, what's a good example of a kind of journal that can help with mental wellness?
Well, one of the most popular you see it everywhere, is gratitude journals. This is where you stop and list, like actively think through it. Okay, what am I grateful for in life today? And you write down the ideas, right? Maybe you're grateful for, well, my iPhone is one of the things I'm grateful for. So I'd put that on. And of course, Sarah and my wife, we have a wonderful life here. So I'd write that down. And then, when the stuff hits the fan and you're going through real rough times, you look back at that and it kind of can help you realize that, life might not be so bad. Plus what you think about, but that the act of doing this, the act of writing it down into a journal in a systematic, habitual way, usually it's like once a day, for example, is that it puts these things more in your consciousness. And while you're going through tough times, you remember that, there are sunny spots in life and that can be really helpful.
So let's talk about why using a journaling app specifically as a tool is different from using something like a notes app, where you're just writing for the sake of writing.
Yeah, and this is the bottom line of the reality that all developers of journaling apps have to contend with is that, if you have the self-discipline and you have the creativity and, wherewithal, you can just use a notes app to do exactly the same thing. Nothing stops you. It's just like, you don't have to get a special diary notebook to write a diary, and you could do it in like your school notebook, right? But these special apps, what they try to do is give you the tools to make it easier to get into the habit. So they're trying to support you in your journaling with various tools. And so, for example, they offer different tools to help you do that, like quotes and inspirations. You might get asked a question like in a daily prompt, like if you had to change your name, what would it be, or something like that. So that way it helps you because you're not starting with a blank page or an empty edit field. You're starting with something to think about and respond to, and that can really help overcome the, oh my God, what do I write?
Yeah, that's also interesting too, because what you write in that moment, it would be different if I asked you the same thing tomorrow based on your mood and where you are emotionally.
Exactly. And these programs, these apps will provide you a kit of tools to help you really get into the habit of just easily, you know, writing down your thoughts, really thinking about different things. They might give you recording, you know, things like audio, the ability to record audio, the ability to do other things so you can document your life, because, you know, other people will use journals for posterity, right? And they want to document everything without it being public like a blog. So, you know, some of these apps will try to cater to both those kinds of diaries and journals.
Very good. What does the Day One app offer that makes it so popular among blind people?
Well, first of all, it's been around the block. Day One has been with us since about 2011, and they have over 10 million downloads. So they're in here to stay. They're not going anywhere. So there's the whole permanence aspect of this, right, that they've built up. They offer, they try to really be all, you know, everything to all people who want a journal, right? So they're the one-stop shop. If you like Day One and you're willing to pay for their subscription, the idea is you're not going to need anything else for your journaling needs. So they are sort of the premium top of the food chain in this space, and they've been that for a long time. It's very hard to compete with them, given their feature set. And once they made themselves accessible and learned and really took their blind audience seriously, they've never looked back. And there's been help voiceover, you know, steps have been taken to make sure that voiceover can access the app really easily. It can go with you anywhere. You can do this. They have apps for your Apple Watch, for your tablet, your computer, you know, everything, right? So and you can have as many, if you pay for the subscription, you can have as many devices as you want. And they do offer a lot for free as well. So even their free level is really robust.
Mm, yeah, that's true. There are specific things that you know, if you use it regularly enough, you run into going, oh, I got to pay for this to get that. But you can definitely start a journaling habit, ritual, whatever you want to call it, going with the free version of Day One, Mike. And full disclosure, this is the app that I use for journaling. So talk about the paid version, the subscribed version.
So the free version gives you one journal, and it gives you basically unlimited entries. You can add one photo per entry. I believe it'll transcribe about 5 minutes of audio per entry, and that's where it actually you can record, and it will dictate any words that picks up in the recording. It'll transcribe them so that then you can search your audio entries, right? So if you did I say something about eggs yesterday, you could actually find that, right? So there's a lot of, and of course, with the full version, all the limits get removed. You can have as many different journals for as many different things as you want. You can have, you know, unlimited entries, unlimited audio transcription, up like audio entries can be up to 3 hours, as many photos attached to an entry as you want, bonus colors for your different journals if you're into that. But, you know, for low vision users, that could be probably helpful, I would presume. I've never seen colors, so that's just theoretical.
Mm-hmm. But some of them sound really nice.
Oh, yeah. The description, yeah, you know, the words.
Yes. Seriously.
Yeah. You know, so it's, and of course, everything's encrypted. You have private, encrypted, secure storage. If you don't trust iCloud or whatever, you have access to their private servers. So if you think, yeah, this bunch is going to be in business a long time, you know, they give you free unlimited server space. Plus, you can actually turn your journal into a book afterwards if you want to. They actually have a publishing system where you can sort of do that, and you get a discount on the price of how, you know, depending on how long it is, you know, when you decide to do that. So, you know, if you're doing this for family, for documenting life or whatever, you know, there are facilities for that too. So it's everything to all people. And it's on all devices. They really pull out all the stops for their pro members. And it's, you know, if you're really serious about journaling, you get a lot in Day One Pro.
Nice. Is there help available for the Day One app?
There is some. It could be a bit more there. You know, they have, you can go to the dayoneapp.com website. And that's probably the best place, that you have articles there that will help you with various aspects of the app. You do have customer support. And if you subscribe to the pro, you get 24-hour customer support, 7 days a week. So there's that. There's also community in a podcast. They have a day one podcast where you learn more about what they're doing with the app and you hear from the developers. You have Facebook and other communities. Instagram, I believe, is another one. And so there's lots of enthusiastic people using this who I'm sure would be happy to help if they can. Plus, as I say, it's so accessible with VoiceOver. It's got the hints. You know, if you turn on VoiceOver hints, you've got all that. So there's a lot there. You're not going to be stuck on your own if you find it just tough to get started, you know? So there is quite a bit there.
There is a lot. So let's try to break it down in terms of a tour of the app, Mike. Give us the layout.
Yeah, okay. So at the very top, you have the search. We can search your diary. There's no tabs. This is all on one screen. And when you need something, you double tap and it kind of pops up over top of the main screen. So it's very simple that way. The top row is like search and settings and more. So the top three or four buttons across there, there's a search field and settings more. And then there's a few buttons to open different entries, right? So you have audio, text, photo, to quickly add what you want to add, right? But I prefer, and then you have the block of text that's your journal, right? So you have the latest entries sort of in the middle. And if you go down, then you get on the bottom of the screen, you get another row of buttons, which I think are a bit more practical, especially for beginners, because it's a bit less cluttered down there. The very left, you have entry text timeline, media timeline. So you can look at the, you know, timelines with your text or entry or media additions. That would be pictures and audio and stuff separately. Then in the middle of the bottom is very important. It's new entry. You double tap that. And then you can choose between answering the daily prompt, which is right there in the menu, and flick right, and there's an answer edit field right there. You can just double tap to answer that. Or you keep going, and you find additional options for new entry, either as text or audio, and you just double tap on what you want, and you're off to the races. The audio starts recording right away if you do that, so just be warned about that. So then to the right, there's also buttons for calendar and maps. You can actually look at a calendar with all your entries or a map with all the locations where you've done entries, because you can add a whole bunch of metadata to entries, including your health, including the weather, all kinds of different things, and of course, location and the date and time and so on. So a lot of other stuff can get added in. It can tie in with Apple Health. So you can really, and that can provide a lot of context too for what you write down beyond your words. So there's an awful lot there, and that's basically the layout in a nutshell. There's of course in the more in the settings, of course there's a bunch of things to change, to accommodate whatever kind of journal you want to keep and whatever your needs are. It's very, very flexible.
Mm-hmm. Mike, we have 30 seconds. So you've had the Pro subscription for a year now. You've been testing it out. Do you find that it's worth you paying for and trying to use?
Well, personally, I find it's a bit overkill. I don't need all the bells and whistles that this thing offers. I'm just not doing enough journaling in enough of different ways. I'm a writer primarily. So I'm kind of looking for other cheaper options, and I found some. There are a lot of choices. But if you are into journaling in a serious way and you want something that's easy to get going, day one is a really good place to start. The free offering is robust, and it offers a lot there. If you're willing to pay for that subscription, you do get easily your money's worth.
Thank you, Mike. We'll talk to you next week about more journaling.
All righty. We'll see you then.
Mike Fair joining us every Thursday to talk audio entertainment and tech.
Gardener Susan Kearney stops in next, and she has a shout out. We'll start with that after this. It's Kelly and Company. Welcome back to the program. Rumya Muth and Kelly McDonald, hosts of the show. Boy, look at all this stuff for the roundtable. Boy, we're going to have a good talk when Alex Smythe joins us a little later on, Rum. We're going to start off... Oh, I can't tell you any of that. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, hopefully you'll be with us and have a great time hanging in here during the roundtable. What?
What?
That was a big wow.
Tease. It was just far beyond teasing.
No, that was my poor memory that I'm not supposed to share any of the items on the round table with you. That's cheating. Poor Alex isn't here to get any hints.
Right.
So I can't
easily email him if you wanted to share.
Yeah, but the hint that I might slip up and give you might be no use to him. He might be screaming foul already, saying, look, come on.
All right. Fine.
You know, you can't favor
Make
like
up your
that.
Own rules.
Just because she's the co-host, don't favor. Justification, folks. That's it. Gardening. I like to sit outside and do a round table with you guys as the weather gets nicer, and positioned in like Sue Kearney's garden would be a wonderful place to host a show and do the round table. Anyway, ponder that idea as we bring Susan on to talk gardening.
Hello, I'm Susan Kearney. Join me on Kelly and Company to learn about the joy of gardening by using touch, taste, scent, and sound.
So at a better time, Sue, we definitely have to think about doing that. Sitting outside, lemonade.
Ooh, that would be fun.
That would be a really cool show to do.
It would be.
Yeah, I'm going to perseverate on that now and aggravate the manager. Sue, you got a shout out to do, first of all, starting off the show, and welcome back.
Yes, I do. Congratulations to Jeff and his lady to have a garden to plan and plant. I think that's really neat.
Well, he's been fun Good spreading luck. Manure in a different way than he does around talking to us. It's a total, you know, he's been having a ball in there. And you know, Sue, I think it goes to... when I listen to Jeff talk about it, it's kind of like that family thing. You know, I always remember with my mom helping her out and stuff like that. And I remember when I got an apartment once, we had in a house, had space in the back where all us tenants could go out there and mess around. You could, you know, sit around and that. And I wanted to make a bit of a garden. So I had a little bit of fun. My dad gave me a hand setting it all up. It was just a blast just to have some but. The big thing was it came from that place of the family garden, and I kind of wonder, your children take on to that? Did they?
My kids are huge, really big gardeners. Yeah,
that's amazing. Yeah, that's really cool. Well, today you wanted to get into talking about our turf lawn. What do we need to cover when it comes to this, especially thinking of it now in April?
Mm-hmm. We don't have very much turf lawn. It's pretty well filled up with a lot of other things. We've got a little bit. And the first thing that is usually done is something called aerating. In fact, we had them come this morning and do it. We thought they were going to be coming last week, but they showed up this week. And that is a machine that takes plugs of your grass and soil out of the lawn so that it can breathe and water can get down in there. And I guess once the next thing would be fertilizing. And these plugs they're quite large and they just sort of sit all over the lawn when this machine pulls it out, makes an awful lot of noise, but it's very good for the lawn. We do this every year. What's very interesting is as soon as it's done, my dogs go out in the backyard and they bring all these big lumps of soil and grass to me. So there's a lot up on the deck I'm going to have to clean up later.
Are they kind of like picturing what we used to in wood shop when we'd work with wood, you'd get a knot in a piece of wood. And if you pictured a lawn, like a big chunk of, is it kind of just a really hard bit of like you say, tangled grass and soil that just, once you yank it out?
It can be, and it is hard because, of course, it's, you know, the ground is still, you know, very hard right now. And it's just like a plug, like a cork, and then they just eventually just melt back into the lawn. But it actually lets the lawn breathe. Is really what it does.
Because they must, with being hard, almost distribute, move. Like, is there that many? Like, do you get a lawn then with, like, basically a bunch of holes in it?
Yeah.
And everything falls back together?
Yes. Wow. Basically, yes. And then it starts to grow in again. But it's very funny because this machine leaves all these plugs and my dogs go and pick them up.
That's
and bring
neat.
Them up to the deck.
It's amazing it finds them. Like, you know, it goes through and rips them out, drops them, and away it goes to the next one.
Yeah, they do. It's very interesting. This happens every year. The next thing is fertilizing. Now, fertilizing, because we will probably be fertilizing the lawn within the next few days because we're going to have lots of rain, and that's a good time to do it. When you're doing fertilizing the lawn, lawn fertilizer has a very high content of nitrogen in it. So when you're doing that, and nitrogen actually greens it up. That's what nitrogen does. That's why they put a high content. In fact, I think it's usually the top number in many long, like the lawn fertilizers, are pretty close to the top. And when you're spreading that, if you have flowering shrubs or bushes or trees or even a perennial garden, protect those because the fertilizer is not going to hurt them, but it will green them up and they will just give a lot of foliage and you won't get any blooms. It stops those particular flowering things from actually blooming.
Okay.
They just go very green.
Kind of the opposite of what you want happening in your garden.
Yes, especially for the your flowering things. I usually say about three. Keep that fertilizer a good 3 to 4 feet away from those particular things, or you can protect them. You can put mulch down, or you can even put burlap, anything to block that fertilizer from going in, like along those trees. Some people don't have like cutout a soil around trees or bushes or shrubs. So, and that's when you can get the runoff off of the grass fertilizer. So
right.
That's just something to look out for.
Does this help in any way with weeds, this particular fertilizer?
No. Weeds are a whole different, because I always say that a weed is a plant growing where you don't want it.
Right.
I don't worry about weeds in my turf lawn. I'm not, I never have, and I've never used any kind of weed killer or anything like that. I'm not one of those people who use that, and I've never really worried about having dandelions in my lawn. Doesn't bother me at all. But if you have a healthy lawn, then a lot of those weeds won't encroach. It's when it's not healthy that you start to get that encroaching of
right. Well, and
it's
going
to be a good way
that.
To tell.
Well, you see that in a lot of lawns that are just left, right? Like around, where really it's like city property or whatever. That's where all you go, oh, look at all the dandelions. And that's a really good point, because I think for most people, they see it in our education of it is get those out of there. They're ugly. They're weeds. Yeah. They're killing your lawn.
Yeah. Yeah. But they're not. They're actually, if you have a very, very, if you like turf grass and you've got it and you want to take care of it, that you'll keep those away just by maintaining the lawn, and you don't have to use any of those spray. I'm against them anyway, so you don't have to use any of that little bit of elbow grease once in a while if you really don't want things, creeping in on it. But a healthy lawn will itself keep those things away. So, and the next one helps too, overseeding. And if you overseed after the fertilizing, then and you can do it 2 or 3 times in a season. And there's all sorts of different seeds. I mean, goodness, there's seeds for sunny areas, grassy areas, for shade areas, for drought. That's usually what we use because we never use tap water on our lawn. We let Mother Nature water it if she's going to, and if she doesn't, sometimes if it's really dry, I will empty out the rain barrel a little bit just to put a little bit on the grass. But once it gets really hot and dry in the summer, it is the last thing in my garden to get watered. I don't worry about my turf lawn. So that's
and how does it, when it comes to such droughts that we've seen in Toronto area, how does it persevere? When it comes to that, since that, if you're using just some of that rain barrel water, which is kind of like the last resort emergency.
Yeah. Well, you know, I usually just let it go brown and it just dies off. And I don't worry about that. Now, this year, I actually got some wildflower seeds, and I may sprinkle some around into the mix it with some of the overseeding of the grass and get some wildflowers going and just see how that comes out. That'll be interesting. Yeah. Oh, that's a new thing I'm going to try this year.
So the second thing, unless there's anything else you want to say about the turf lawn, Susan, next thing you wanted to talk about was a new approach. Because last time we talked about the spring cleaning for gardens, garden spring cleanup, and there was a lot to cover. And I think that's what partially helped Jeffy and Aaron start cleaning up their garden area as well. Yeah. So you found a new approach or a new point of view that you wanted to share with us.
Yeah, this is interesting. And I think a couple segments ago, I said that I must have been lazy because I was going around looking at the garden and thinking, wow, I left this here and I left that there. And then I read this article. I believe it was I should actually check up where I got it from, but it was World Wildlife Foundation, I believe, that put this out. And they talked about how important it is to leave some of that dead growth in the garden up until a certain time. Now we can remove it, but through the winter and early spring, because it actually is shelter for a lot of like little weed creatures that we, you know, we don't even know are there. Many of the bugs and they actually have nested in there, and that is their home. So if we clean that up all like too quickly, we're throwing out their homes and throwing them out too. So I thought that was really interesting that I did leave all that stuff. And then when I read, I thought, wow, I did something really good for a bunch of little bugs, because many of our returning birds, our migrant birds that are coming back, they eat those larvae. Mm-hmm. They live on that, which is really interesting. Many of them are caterpillars that will turn into butterflies or moths. They're, you know, and they are our pollinators. It was actually a very interesting article, and I thought, wow, that's good. I can be lazy next year too. So.
Hey,
and
yes, yeah. In print, yeah. It's justified the excuse of it. That is absolutely excellent, though, to discover
I know.
Sue. But also, like you say, it's that part of the cycle, right?
Yes, it is. And I noticed like my some of my ornamental grasses I left, and I was very pleased about it because. My husband said he actually saw birds pecking around in that area. So they're being fed. I'm just going to leave that for another 3 or 4 weeks. I won't be planting anything there right now. And a lot of my herbs, I left my dry herbs, and there's been a bunny that's come to our yard.
Oh, nice picture. That'll be great when we're doing the show there, Suze. Suze, time to go. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Bye.
Thanks, Susan Kearney, our gardener. You can tune in every second Thursday here on Kelly and Company for our chats with her. We're going to take a break, and in a second, oh boy, here comes the subject we love. Takeout Day has turned into a weekly food holiday. We learn more with Chef Trevor Louie after this. So we are a show that has a variety of programming over here at Kelly and Company. We'll talk lifestyle, health, leisure. Once in a while, we'll throw some sports in, more than the co-host would like. A lot of time, we'll throw food in, right? Mm-hmm. That's part of lifestyle and leisure, right, Rum?
Yeah, any day of the week.
Yeah, and that is something that people don't mind us sprinkling around and chatting about a lot on the show. You can check out the Kelly and Company podcast. If you don't believe me, if you're new to the show, simply subscribe using your favorite podcatcher and check us out. Maybe while you're in there, give us a rating and review. That's Kelly and Company, available to you in full show form, and also the segments of the show also available on the full show. We also include an audio vanity card. I am the host of the program, Kelly McDonald, with my co-host, Rum Yamuthan.
Well, as we said earlier in the show, Kels, Margaret Weldon, whose birthday it is today, shares the special day with something else that's quite unique and we all must take part just because it's awesome. On April 15th, 2020, Canada Takeout introduced its very first National Takeout Day in support of the Canada restaurant industry. And since then, Takeout Day has evolved into a national, not only an annual holiday for us to celebrate, but a weekly day to celebrate. And we're going to talk more about this with Chef Trevor Louis. Trevor, thank you for coming on Kelly and Company.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we're very excited to talk about this initiative. And can you start off by telling us a little bit about Takeout Canada and what the mission is behind it?
Well, when we first took a look at launching Canada Takeout Day a year ago, I think a lot of us didn't think we'd still be in the same spot a year later. And it was really an initiative to help encourage and drive consumers across the country to replace some of their home meals with takeout meals that would help support and generate some much-needed business and income for small local businesses in the restaurant community.
You know, it's been so tough as you know, as we watch the news and watch what comes in our inbox and related to the pain that so many small businesses are going through. And, you know, you sit home saying, well, geez, what can I do? And here's, you know, a great way that, hey, well, here's what you can do and support as well as learn a little bit about it. This is the second annual Canadian Takeout Day when we look at it. And as you say, didn't expect it to be carrying on this long. But what would you say to the people out there who really, maybe that's not what they do, take out, they want to, they've been getting in a habit of making food at home, to kind of give them that push to, hey guys, you know, remember the smaller guys, a lot of the big guys out there, McDonald's and so on. I'm not saying they don't need help either, but not the help we're talking, Trevor.
Mm. Well, let's take a look at some real quick facts. In this 1 year alone, we have lost over 10% of our restaurants permanently already. And if we continue with the trend as we are now with extended lockdowns, we're going to lose as much as another 18% of our restaurants. And what I'd like to remind people, these are all our little places that are in our communities that we all have loved our entire lives. Places where we get our cup of coffee, our loaf of bread, you know, that family pizza, all those little places that are quickly disappearing, particularly the small local businesses that have been struggling for a long time just to keep up and keep their staff working and their doors open. There's a financial side to this, and there certainly has been a mental side of this that has inflicted most of us in this industry at one point or another over this last year. So this is just a reminder that in a seven-day week, if you've got 27 meals, shift a couple of those a week to some of your favorite local spots. And that will help make not a huge difference, but it will make a little bit of a difference.
Mm-hmm. Something. Yeah. And the restaurants are doing their part, making themselves available. We know that the tough time that people had to go through to get creative and make sure that they're letting themselves be known, really. Because when I think of traveling, the first thing a lot of us think of is food. You know, what kind of food and cuisine are we going to check out when we're in these new destinations? And now a lot of us being at home, we're looking around the corner and going, oh, you know, I never realized how much local eats there were and how much big chain options there are around us. So it is important, I'm sure you would say, to eat local, try local.
It is. And, you know, there's a couple of maybe habitual things that people do in their shopping cycle that they can change to help small business. If you're going to your weekly grocery store and you get certain ingredients for shopping at your big box stores, if you check your local restaurants, many restaurants have done these great things to diversify their business, which includes, you know, meal kits, spices, sauces, cookbooks, all these little things that they've added to their repertoire to help themselves survive and to give everyone a little bit of a bigger piece of what their brand, their food that we may have missed not having while we're closed, right? So there's so many different ways you can support your local business. And, you know, this year we want to make it a little bit more fun to generate some more notoriety as we're trying to set a record to get as many people to order takeout on April 15th as much as possible. So you can go on CanadaTakeout.com and just literally load your takeout receipt and we'll tabulate everything and see if we could set a record in one day.
Wow. Very good. Very good. And what a way, because it's so funny, before the pandemic, we were all talking, trying to, you know, show how cool. And that's what it felt like. Everybody, you know, it's a trend, eat local kind of thing, support, especially with the different seasons. You may want this more, you may want that more. Do it local. Get away from some of the big stores and the eateries for health reasons, even for and that support. Come the pandemic, what of course presents itself a little easier, some of the big places that can advertise the heck out of things, you're in the panic, you're in a, you know, stressful mode, you're forgetting about so much of the eat local and support the stores, and everyone who's screaming, hey man, we're struggling here, isn't being heard. And I'm kind of wondering, this is what it is, and as you say, as we go on, we're going to lose potentially more business. How do we get people focusing and seeing the small, the eat local businesses more? I mean, today is wonderful, but going forward, what do we need to think about as we sit there on Saturday thinking of something to eat while McDonald's is blasting a big commercial at us on TV?
Mm. I think if people haven't noticed it when they're going for that drive or going for that walk, is to see how many vacant spaces and storefronts there are on your local streets. It is it's a lot more prominent than we even notice, because there's so much noise these days. Our attention span is very short. That's the first one. The other thing we don't really talk about is the 360 effect at closure of local businesses. This doesn't stop and start just at the restaurant level. Certainly it is a driver on job creation, but it also flows all the way down to the top of the chain and our Canadian agricultural partners who produce our food as well. So if there's not enough restaurants that are buying product,
that's it.
What's going to happen? What's going to happen to all the stock and all the agriculture that's created by our Canadian farmers across the country? So, and then certainly in the middle is, you know, your manufacturing, right? All the essential workers that we talk about right now who are in food plants processing food. So all the way up and down, it's a 360 that's fully affected if we're not generating more revenue in our economy.
Yeah, no, seriously. And just you giving us that sneak peek of how this really affects everything, like a domino, is extremely eye-opening. So going back to the campaign for today, National Takeout Day, how else are you getting involved? The receipt upload, that's awesome. What else is going on?
Well, we're also encouraging restaurants who can also go on CanadaTakeout.com and get some information to load their business as well so we can do some tabulation. Today really is what I would say a rallying cry to just remind consumers again the importance of supporting local business. We don't know when this is going to end. We certainly were hopeful that there is some relief ahead, at least with opening outside dining and potentially in-restaurant dining. I think we kind of forget sometimes what we've taken for granted, the times we can just go into a cafe and grab a cup of coffee and sit down and have it, or going to your local and celebrating a birthday or a wedding anniversary. We've lost touch with all of these things already. And mm-hmm. I want to encourage everyone to continue doing it. Tip your delivery drivers, tip your takeout, you know, restaurants, be nice to them. They are having a real tough time trying to survive in this climate right now. And like I say, we are dearly near the end of our threshold of being able to survive. So maybe this is just another great exercise in reminding people how important it is that maybe you order that extra pizza this week or that extra order of Chinese food just to drive some business to the local community.
Well, very much so. Give us a hand. What's your favorite cuisines out there to order?
I'm all over the place. It depends on my day. You know, being Asian myself, I love a good Chinese meal, but I love Thai food. I love a good pizza like I had yesterday. I certainly love a good burger. I'm non-discriminatory, so I eat everything. But the one thing I'll tell you I'll do is I try to buy something a little different every single time to move that dollar around. And I also take a look at other things and ways that I can support a restaurant. Like I said, if they have a meal kit that maybe it's a meal that's more than one meal and I can put the rest in my pantry and cook it another day, I'm supporting them and supporting my pantry at the same time, right? So it's a really good way to diversify and be culinary creative at home if you're bringing some of your best restaurants' goods home.
Mm-hmm. That's why those meal kits and all these other extra things, like you said, that restaurants are putting out for us have been so great as well for diversifying, getting a little adventurous. I love it, honestly. So where can we go, Chef Trevor, if we want to learn more about National Takeout Day and the cause and how to get involved?
You can just go onto the website at CanadaTakeout.com. All the information is there. Once again, I also encourage people to go and look at the websites of your local restaurants, because I think a lot of times we just tap an app and go. So check in with your local restaurants, check in on their Instagram, see what specials there are, call them up and order direct. That way you can save them those fees that they have to pay some of the third party delivery guys. Even that, go for a walk and pick it up yourself. Because you know what people need? Even if it's for that half second of seeing a face, that human interaction really helps people, particularly with mental health these days. We want to see people, even though we can do it safely between barriers and glass. Seeing people and expressions help us get through these tough days. Because I'll tell you, a lot of times, even though we're you know, scurrying to get takeout orders, there's a lot of gaps and lulls where there's no business. So to see other people and expressions help the staff get through the day.
So appreciate you coming on, Chef Trevor. Thank you so much for giving us all the tips, giving us the info, and hope to get you back on soon.
Thank you so much. Take care, guys.
We were speaking with Chef Trevor Louis about the second annual Canada Takeout Day.
Absolutely fantastic, folks. Take part. In the next hour of Kelly and Company on Curious Minds, Christine Malik highlights cross-cultural learning and shares how one blind woman is making connections across cultures. Today's roundtable guest is Alex Smythe, TV reporter from Toronto. Coming up next, though, committee reporter from Southwestern Ontario, Annette Dennis, is going to be previewing Discovering the Wisdom of the Forest, an event by Canadian Geographic. We'll talk to her after this.
When you recognize sighted people just by their footsteps.
Hello, Kevin.
Howdy.
You've got Kelly and Company on right now on AMI Audio.
From Sylvia Grinnell Territorial Park in Nunavut to Middle Island in Ontario, AMI Audio is in your community.
So much to talk about on Kelly and Company as we begin hour two, getting you ready to get your dinner in. Maybe you'll do a takeout today. You know what? Help them out, folks, if you can. Also, remember, our first repeat of the program, maybe you'll eat dinner over that if you miss any of the program. 5 p.m. Eastern, midnight, 5 a.m. in the morning. Those are times in which you can re-listen to our program. Ramya Muthan, Kelly McDonald, hosts of the show. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, we like to visit with our community reporters. Today, we're visiting Annette Dennis to talk a little bit about Southwestern Ontario, see what kinds of things are going on out there, out here. Hello, Netsy, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you guys today?
Feeling good after a really uplifting segment, I'd have to say, talking about, you know, especially talking local, and Chef Louis had so many really great things to say. But you've also got, speaking of local, some discussion points here, some things that we want to get into. Where do you want to start, Annette? Harvest by Kent Cameron?
Yeah. This sounds like a really fun thing to do. And it has a little bit of a Southwestern Ontario connection.
For sure.
So this is a play. It's a full-length play, but because of the current situation we find ourselves in, it's an audio version instead of a stage play. Now, this is being presented by Alvego Root Theatre Company, which is located here in London. And it actually went live yesterday. So it is going to be available for folks to listen to April 14th to right through till July 11th. And you can access that via their website, which is alvegorootheatre.com. So that's alvegorootheatre.com. And now this is a free, you can access this free on their website, but, you know, if folks enjoy it, they're free to, there's a donation button where folks can go, and if they feel like donating or can afford to, that's great too. So basically a quick synopsis of the play. Charlotte and Alan are ready to retire from farming and move into a condo in town, but they are not ready to sell their home. Renting out their farmhouse to a nice young couple from the city proves to be too good a solution. They start to notice suspicious clues. These new tenants have no furniture, One of them is named Razor, and their hydro bill is ridiculously high. And actually, the playwright Ken Cameron turns his real-life experiences of his parents selling their southwestern Ontario farm into a very funny and unsettling commentary on the state of rural Canada.
Mm.
So
is it like hard truths put into good humor?
I think so.
Where they make you laugh so you don't feel awkward about it.
Exactly. Yeah. Now this is, I couldn't resist when I saw this. And it's actually performed by two local actors, Jeff Colbert and Elizabeth Durand. And between the two of them, they play just over half a dozen characters between them. So
and Jeff, it sounds like a nice know, distraction. You were talking about Jeff last report, actually, for the production that was going online as well, that he was involved with. A great, great local guy with a lot of theater work. And the whole troupe that gets involved with Alvega Root, fabulous work they do. And you talk about turning incredible performances, incredible scripts.
Yeah. He's, I know he's a professional actor. And Elizabeth Durand, her name is very, very familiar. So I'm looking forward to it. I actually did see him a couple summers ago. My mom and I saw Jeff in a play in Port Stanley. He was in it, and it was a wonderful performance. So I'm looking forward to this. Yeah, and it's nice to support local theater for sure.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We'll put all that information up on the blog too, folks, ami.ca/Kelly Co. And again, Annette, it runs from the 14th of April to July 11th. So lots of really great time for people to check it out. And love that they're doing the radio show format. I think folks will really enjoy what they get to take in there, and certainly accessible.
Oh, exactly. It's. I listened to a little bit. It did go live. I listened to the first little bit, and it's just, you know, these times we find ourselves are very strange. But like you said, with you and your old time radio, it's interesting to see how more and more theater troupes and stuff like that are going audio. And it's an interesting thing, thing that's coming out of this whole thing.
Yeah, and it's an awesome way if people can figure out how to monetize it. Another thing groups can do, and a lot of groups can do, reads that turn out that way. So I think they're going to learn it's another avenue, and especially to grow talent.
Exactly. Absolutely.
So next on your list, Annette, is something that sounds like it's also a lot of truths and hard truths going on, Discovering the Wisdom of the Forest. And this is from Can Geo Talks. It's a free online event.
Yeah. So this is happening Thursday, May 6th from 8:30 p.m. until 11 p.m. And it's part of the Can Geo Talks series. It's a free event put on by Canadian Geographic. And so it sounds really interesting. It's the little theme here. It's not about how we can save the trees, but about how the trees could actually save us. So this is a conversation with Dr. Suzanne Simard. She's a professor of forest ecology at the University of British Columbia. And she's one of a world-leading expert and pioneer on the tree connectivity and communication. So she actually has a book coming out in May, and it's called Finding the Mother Tree, and it takes readers on an intimate journey of groundbreaking scientific discovery with humor, emotion, and the narrative voice of a lifelong storyteller. So I think she kind of mixes her career as a scientist, and it's a bit of a memoir about, you know, how she grew growing up in BC and you know, exploring the forest with her siblings. So basically, she links her research and other personal experiences, recounting her life's work, uncovering what's called you probably have heard this, the Wood Wide Web, which is the underground Miculum, I'm not going to sure if I say that, Miculum network that connects all of the trees and the plants within a forest, and how the network allows them to share nutrients and communicate, share information, which all stems, in her research, originates from the hubs, which she calls the mother trees. So it sounds really interesting. I know there's been books in the past that I've been meaning to read that kind of talk about this. So it sounds really fascinating.
Yeah, I checked out their YouTube channel before this, and it really did look like there was a lot of things to take in. They go live, but then there's just the archive of things that they've put on, Ken. what did you call it? Cangiotox?
Yeah, Cangio. Exactly. Yeah. I did notice that they do have other ones. And like, if folks can't make this on live mm-hmm. event, it's going to be streamed on Facebook, Twitter. On Facebook, it's Canadian Geographic. On Twitter, it's at CanGeo, C-A-N-G-E-O. It's on their YouTube. But like you said, it will be archived so folks can go and access it later or any of the other talks they have.
Exactly. But it is a good one or a good couple of topics to go down the rabbit hole with, because honestly, it seems like you've been mentioning the scientific backing and her experience in the field, but also that bit of spirituality that comes with anything regarding nature. And I think at a time like this, why not? And there goes Glizzy agreeing with me.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome. I feel so privileged. I actually get to hear during my report. That is
no,
awesome.
Don't feel so flattered. There's some natural.
I think he agrees natural, with us. He wants to go for a walk in the tree.
There's just some nature noise in the hallway. Quit it, you two. Next week, topic three, technology, privacy, and security. Like, you know, a dog barking security dog. That's what it is.
Exactly. So this is happening Tuesday, April 27th from 1:30 to 3 p.m. Eastern. And this is brought to us by the CNIB Foundation. So it's a virtual Zoom event. So this one kind of jumped out at me. You guys talk tech a lot on your show, but I thought this one kind of hit home for me personally, because technology, I just lost my spot. It's opened so many doors of opportunity for us, but at the same time, it's also, there's that risk too of losing your personal information and people tapping into your private lives or sort of thing. And I know for me, I know how to do my smartphone. I know how to do my computer, and I kind of set this aside and say all's well, and I don't really try not to think about privacy and security. So I thought this was a really good opportunity to share it with folks who maybe are are similar to me, and they just kind of don't think about it, right? Out of sight, out of mind.
Right on.
And that's not always the case. So this is going to be just a basic introduction to it, and some of the topics the tech team at the CNIB Foundation are going to cover, what folks need to know about privacy, security, and technology, common security threats, and how to protect yourself, and how to create strong passwords and protect your personal information when you're out surfing on the internet.
That's amazing. That's really cool. What do we need to do about how to get a hold of Shane here? We know Shane, and he's the contact and running it.
Yes. Yes, he's the main contact over at CNIB, so people need to register ahead of time so they can get the link and everything. So the email for that is tsf.tech@cnib.ca, or you can call 1-800-563-2642 and connect with Shane and register for this particular session.
Okay, April 27th. We'll get it up on the blog too, ami.ca/KellyCo, so that you can get involved and be a part of this. Annette, I think that's one of the hardest things that people are, and we've said this on the show, they want security, but on the other hand, we also want comfort and ease.
Exactly. Definitely. It's important to, you know, for me, I know I just, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think about it. And then you think, well, what personal information do I have out there that people, sure. But you know, we do for sure.
For sure. It is something that's a nice way to be able to figure out how to do it. All right. Again, up on the blog for the information, ami.ca/KellyCo. We talked to Annette Dennis next month for her Southwest Ontario report. Appreciate you coming in here, upsetting the dog, but, you know, getting his attention, distracting. But thanks, Annette.
Okay. Nice talking to you guys. Take it easy.
You betcha. We're going to take a break, and we talk to our community reporters. Keep that in mind, folks, Tuesdays and Thursdays here on the program until the 26th, when we'll have them on Mondays and Tuesdays on the show. Curious Minds, hosted by Christine Malik. We've got that segment ahead. Really interesting conversation. Stand by here on Kelly & Company. Saturday on The Pulse at 10 a.m. Eastern, Joita discusses recent immigration reforms for people with disabilities. She'll be speaking with Toronto Star immigration reporter Nicholas Kuhlman and Professor Jay Dolmich from the University of Waterloo. On Sunday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, Joita discusses the significance of the parasport movement and the challenges faced by athletes during the pandemic in the upcoming Paralympic Games with Laura Messiner of Western University. The Pulse this weekend here on AMI Audio, also available as a podcast. So check out The Pulse at your convenience. That way you can simply subscribe, as you can so many other programs right here on AMI Audio. Kelly McDonald with Ramya Muthan.
Once a month, we like to ask one of our contributors a few questions, and they give us all the answers on Curious Minds with Christine Malik.
Whatever happened to... What does that mean? How does that work?
Oh, I didn't know that.
I never knew. I'm Christine Malik, and this is Curious Minds, a monthly dive into arts and culture from a blindness perspective.
Well, Christine, to be fair, it's usually you asking the questions and somebody giving you answers. But, you know, we're all learning by extension. So today, speaking of learning, you're going to cover cross-cultural learning and how one blind woman is making connections happen across cultures. This is a really cool initiative.
Oh, Yang Wong is an Asian Canadian. She has lived, studied, and worked in three countries. She has a master's degree in economics. And 4 years ago, she started the East and West Learning Connections. And she's going to explain more about what it is. It's a lovely initiative. And she has unique perspectives on where disability and multiculturalism can inform each other. And she definitely believes that we do best when we focus on what we can learn from each other. So let's give a listen.
Yang, can you tell us about the East-West Learning Connections and how the idea came to you to start the group?
It's a federally registered not-for-profit organization. Our goal is to help people of different heritages break cultural barriers and get connected. And we do this by bringing in learning and communicating and volunteering opportunities for the public, especially for immigrant communities. I started this group more than 4 years ago as a grassroots culture group. At that time, my big boy just went to grade 9, and I asked around among some other Chinese parents whether they would like to join me and my son to learn about Canadian etiquette communication skills. Because I feel like as immigrants, we come from a very different culture, and we come here, we need to learn that. We need to learn the culture, the people, the customs here, so we can communicate with others in an acceptable way. And that way we can feel more at home here. And we can really contribute to diversity in a positive way.
You make a distinction between language and culture. So there are lots of ways, I think, where someone who is a new Canadian can learn language. But what was your goal around culture? Can you give me some examples of the gap in culture learning that you are trying to fill?
Language is a big barrier, but other than that, once you grasp the language, more or less, there are a lot of things you still don't know. Many immigrants feel difficult to have a conversation with their coworkers, because when their coworkers talk about maybe like maple leaves or some famous people, they just take for granted. But immigrants, they don't know the places, the people, the history. And also there are some different behavior. If you don't know the customs here, you will be regarded as rude. For example, in China, people say less thank you because they think it's all reciprocal, it's all mutual. So they'll do these things for others right away without thinking, and they think no need to say thank you. Actually, if you thank you all the time, especially to your friends or your families, people will think you're a little bit weird.
That is so interesting.
Yeah. So when we came here, we say less, but then people will think you're rude. So we learn. I learn to say more of thank you. And once I get used to it, even now when I go back to China, I tend to say thank you more often.
You yourself are blind. Do you feel that being blind makes you more interested in making cultural connections? Is it a relevant part of what you're doing? Has it created any barriers for you in doing this work, or is it completely irrelevant to the work? How do you feel about that?
I would say it's irrelevant. However, as a blind person, I do find actually kind of advantage here, because I participate in our blind community here a lot. So a lot of blind organizations. So I have an enriched life here because I am blind. Yeah, it's so lucky for me to live in Toronto. We have so a strong blind community presence here. And I get to know a lot of great people. And there, I learn more about Canadian culture and people through them. And also, yeah, and also I invite them. I invite some people to my group to be guest speakers, to share their life stories, their thoughts, their concerns. So we have this East and West dialogue events, monthly events. So I invite people from other cultural backgrounds to come over to share, have a dialogue with immigrants.
And so it is increasing diversity in the sense of the new Canadians that you're working with. They're getting a glimpse into another diverse group in Canada.
I think at that very individual level, when people get to know each other, their life, their concerns, they'll find out, like ultimately, we're the same. So we share a lot more things in common than difference.
I was on a call recently where I heard you speaking about what the Chinese community did in Canada to respond to the pandemic a year ago. And this kind of fits into the context of some of the very frightening anti-Asian racism that has manifested itself lately. And you spoke about things that the Chinese community in Canada was doing before the Canadian government in order to help keep Canadians safe. And that was completely new information to me. And I did not know why. I had not heard this before. So can you explain what was going on in the Chinese community in Canada around COVID a year ago?
Yes. I give you an example. I started a volunteer group at the end of January last year. So like when Wuhan
in 2020.
So yes. At the end of January, I started this volunteer group. What we did was to promote self-quarantine for travelers coming back from China. We promote that, and we provided support for people to do that if they could not find families or friends to do grocery shopping for them. And the volunteers would do that for them. And also in that group, we exchange information, like how to find a well-equipped taxi driver to go to have an airport pickup, or where to find a room for self-quarantine. Because some people, they couldn't find their landlords, refused them to, you know, to stay. So where to find a room. And if you're in the room, how to do yourself, like DIY, a quarantine room for yourself.
Right.
and all the medical latest updates, development. So it's very important for people to know. When they know, they will probably worry a little bit less. I mean, it's all very terrifying, but if you have more information, you'll get more prepared.
Yes.
So all this work, the volunteer group they did, and there are many such kind of volunteer groups across Canada, in Toronto, Hamilton, Vancouver, Montreal, Ottawa, a lot of these kind of volunteer groups. So actually, provincial data shows early cases in Canada was actually mostly travelers coming back from the US, European countries, not from China.
Right.
Because we did that very early. This early intervention really worked.
I wanted to take a moment to talk about your English conversation group, because I think this is a lovely idea. And because everything is virtual now, this is something that has a lot of scope to become very helpful. Can you describe your Wednesday night conversation group?
Every first and third Wednesday night from 7:30 to 8:30, we'll have this conversation. So we have native English-speaking volunteers as facilitators. And then we, based on how many volunteers we can get, we'll keep a rough ratio of 1-4, 1-5. And we open these opportunities to immigrant communities. So when people come together, they'll be in a breakout room, they'll talk to each other. So for participants, they practice their social conversation skills, but also both facilitators and participants, they can exchange, they can share their life experience, they can exchange thoughts on different topics.
Are you looking for native-speaking English volunteers?
Yes, absolutely, because we want to keep that ratio like 1-4 or 5, roughly. So if we can have more English-speaking volunteers, then we will be able to have more participants to take part in this program. And more people can get to know each other at this very individual level, share their life stories.
Oh, my heart is full. That is so beautiful. I'm going to make sure the information goes in the show notes as well. But what's the website where people can find you?
Oh, our website is www.eawlc.org. So EAWLC, again, stands for East and West Learning Connections.
That was a feature of Yang Wang speaking about the East and West Learning Connections with Christine Malik on Curious Minds.
What passion you can hear in her voice, right? The,
yes.
The making the connections, the being able to get people to communicate and that kind of thing. Wow. And that's such a great way to have conversations and be able to come in and share that with us.
Absolutely. And Christine's always featuring some really incredible things on Curious Minds with arts and culture and all of these different things. So we appreciate it once a month as well.
We'll take a break, folks. It's a Thursday, so that means the Kelly and Company Roundtable is up next with our guest, TV reporter from Toronto, Alex Smythe. Talk to you in a moment.
Isn't it convenient that we have a round table?
Well, it's actually oval. Just saying. Yeah.
The blind guy feels it now, goes, well, I don't know. Yeah, I guess it is oval.
Kind of oval.
And we try to bring different people in each week just for the sake of giving different people a different kind of roundtable discussion torture, because this was the big thing when we started doing it. What are we talking about? Some people really care and still try to get it out of the host.
Oh, really?
My co-host, Ramya Muth, is here with us today. And when we do this open conversation on a variety of subjects handpicked by yours truly, we welcome in our today's guest, Alex Smythe, TV reporter for AMI TV. Thanks, pal. Appreciate you coming back and joining us.
Hey, it's always fun to do these and chat with you guys.
Well, let's kick it off with a little McDonald's talk, if we will. It will be mandatory for all workers at McDonald's to take training to prevent harassment, discrimination, and violence in the workplace.
CEO Chris Kempczinski told the AP McDonald's needs to set expectations and then continually refer to them.
Provide both current employees as well as prospective employees the confidence that when they walk into a McDonald's restaurant, they know that they're going to be protected.
2 million workers at McDonald's will get the training. At least 50 workers filed charges against the company over the last 5 years, alleging physical and verbal harassment, and in some cases, retaliation.
A few bad incidents or a few bad issues can set back the work, all the good work that everybody else is doing.
The problem isn't just in the restaurants. McDonald's fired its former CEO, Steve Easterbrook, in 2019 after he admitted having a relationship with an employee. I'm Ed Donahue.
So much more, Ramya, has to be quite a bit more than just talk or for show. And we all know people who work at these mega food corporations like McDonald's. Your feelings about when you hear something like this and belief, especially as a disabled person, we start thinking, and a lot of time women are put in that category of, oh yeah, there's some noise about it. We better roll out something. Where's the heart behind it?
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was going to say in terms of where's the heart behind it. Like, all of this sounds like protocol, which first of all feels like a lot too late, and not to say that it can't still be implemented, but it feels like it's years. I mean, the numbers that he was tossing out there right now about how many incidents there has been and how many people have retaliated because of it, I don't know, man. It always throws me back to another name we're very familiar with, Facebook. You know, yeah. The kind of accountability or lack thereof from big organizations and entities like this who are international and who have so much influence on everybody. It just seems like, shouldn't there be some accountability? And yeah, we're talking about all kinds of vulnerable sectors, women, people with disabilities, employees. But just in general, it's just bad rep. And it's just bad leadership, I find.
You hope that it's not the millions of people that McDonald's has working for them, the fact that so many people in the world, one way or another, are connected, which makes McDonald's, one way or another, connected to all of us hearing this. You wonder, how can you actually roll this out? And obviously, if you want to, you're a company like McDonald's, you certainly can make sure that the word of millions of our staff are going to get this training, you know, regardless of what we say. Well, people should know, and sure, we should know how to treat people, but we also at least look for people just to treat people the way they're told to treat people in the workplace. And if that's the only thing keeping them from being inappropriate, you know, at least it's something. Alex, with the last few years, we see so much go on with social media, and these things are much more visible. Is it that's driving this kind of thing? Or do you think there's more due to it because of the pandemic? And I mean, that could even mean people having, since we're not having people coming in to the McDonald's restaurants in a lot of places throughout the world, maybe it's that drive-through, maybe it's that crew that's in there. What do you think is driving this, the outcries on social media or maybe the pandemic?
You know, I think there's probably a bit of both that's contributing to it. I don't think it's one key incident or one key factor that's really kind of pushing this new mandate, this agenda that's, you know, as Ramya said, it's a bit too late to really be seen as being taken kind of with all the heart and sincerity that it should. I mean, it's part of, hey, you're trying to address an issue in some way. Great. You know, that's positive. It's how you're going about doing it and what the impact really going to be. I mean, there should be obviously more steps taken. And when you're talking about an organization or a company like McDonald's, I mean, the amount of money and power and influence that they're able to utilize and really establish within that brand and that company globally, even when you look, it's like the uniformity that they can have from country to country and basically still have their product and have their, I guess, culture within each one of their restaurants around the world. They can do a lot more, and they can make a lot more effective changes and implement it. They've shown when it's important to them, they can do it. So I really don't know where it's coming from directly, because I don't think there is that one kind of factor that's really contributing to this. I think it's an overall kind of influence of everything, but I feel more can definitely be done, and they've proven it in the past that they can do better at implementing things like this. So why not do more?
Interesting to watch it. Interesting to speak to the people that each of us individually knows that are going to be going through this. And, you know, it's not enough for us just to say, well, people should know better. Why do we even have to be going through this training? We all know right and wrong, and obviously not. Or even if we do, some of us just feel that they're above what is right and what is wrong and do what they want. I want to move on to something, Alex. I know you spend a lot of time as you came to Toronto from the West. John Furlong is pitching a broader Winter Games vision on Friday to Vancouver's Board of Trade. Now, the head of the organizing committee for the 2010 Olympics and Paralympics in Vancouver, and of course, includes Whistler, says more areas of the province could benefit of a 2030 Games if they were brought there.
The idea is to let the whole province become members of one team, to let communities be all on the same team, all pulling in the same direction, and feel like that they are part of something grand, as opposed to being spectators of something grand that's happening 500 miles south of them.
Furlong says that the venues and expertise remaining from the 2010 Games would be really wonderful, would also keep expenses down when it came to hosting a 2030s Olympics or Paralympics. Now, Alex, do you think for people out there, this would be a good thing if they actually go through the motions, get the Games? Where do you think people would stand at this point? Economically, it looks like a good choice.
Yeah, it's interesting, because whenever you kind of look into trying to bid on getting Olympics, Paralympics, you know, there's always this split kind of view from the public. Some are all for it because it's a great way to establish this kind of national presence on a global stage. You can rally behind the pride of the country. And then others say, you know, it doesn't really lead to much. We build up a bunch of stadiums and they kind of go to waste after these large events are done. I think with Canada, and especially out west in BC, we, for the most part, as they say, we already have those venues. We yeah. use those venues in other situations and we utilize them well. I think that having done a lot of work and looking into how the Olympics and Paralympics have run, I think, you know, it's always a positive. We're Canada has been, over the past few years, really been pushing to get more high-profile events and sports tournaments to come to Canada to help show off the country. I mean, we're part of that 2026 World Cup bid, and we've had a few other major events over the past few years. So I think it's a good thing, and I'm sure there's still a majority of people who would agree, but there's always going to be those who say, ah, I don't want it, you know, it gets too crowded, and it floods our local areas, but it also helps develop the areas, you know, infrastructure gets put in place, funding for big projects that may not otherwise get the attention and funding they need get built and done in anticipation of the mass crowds that do come.
Well, it almost makes you think it would be as exciting as it is to watch Olympics of any kind in different venues. It almost makes sense to say, hey, yeah, we still have facilities, and 20 years later, they're still going to be just as usable to do this. Maybe we need to look at that as a cycle that Olympics and Paralympics use, you know, hit 2010 at a place and you're back there in 2024 or something like that to kind of utilize those spaces and that cost, as well as help put that injection of money and tourism back into that area. Maybe that is a way to go, even though I know a lot of us are back there again.
But that's one of the biggest things that people talk about, though. Sorry to jump in, but, you know, with that, so much money is being thrown into these cities, these spots for Olympics, Paralympics, other big games like this. But where do you find the budget, number one? And when you do, it's for that year and then nothing. But it's not really nothing, not even if it's only that one time in a person's lifetime that the Olympics get to be in that area. It's still not nothing because, like you guys are saying, with the infrastructures, with accessibility, with paying attention to those spots that need some prioritizing, I think it's still beneficial.
I think so, too. And I think cycling around, as much as it's a cost thing, if there's a way to kind of make some of that money back, or if a community can have some kind of way of rebounding on a second go, once everything's paid for, the taxes have got it, now you're looking at, I don't want to say profit, but that cap that helps out. Alex, I want to talk to you also about the Vancouver Canucks hockey fan that you are. What should be going on now? You've got players, a team that's got to roll back out on the ice after many of them had COVID. Their families have been dealing with this. Is this a team that we should find another way to and end their season? Should we allow? Is there other, you know, we don't even have as many people in the minors to call up and make the team that just to finish out. And we have the cry of other teams that if you take them away, even if you were to issue them winning points and say, okay, let's just assume every team that plays them from now to the end of the season wins their games, give them those points, because not everybody will play them an equal amount of times or has left on their schedule to do so. As a fan, what do you think?
You know, it's such a challenge because for the most part, I feel like the Canucks have kind of gone through a situation that I think a lot of people, myself included, expected to be more prevalent when sports came back to play earlier. Like, I expected this to be more commonplace when the baseball came back, when football came back. And we did see instances where some teams were heavily impacted and they had to really revamp the schedule. But we didn't see anything to this extent where almost every single person on that team contracted the virus. So as you say, there is that option. Well, do you just award the points? Well, this year is already going to be such a weird year. And, you know, as many people in the sports will talk about, oh, well, whoever wins or however the games and the seasons turn out, there's always this asterisk of COVID pandemic year that's beside the year. I mean, it's going to be the case because of the divisions are different. And, you know, Canada's teams are only playing in Canada. So the rankings are going to be different as if it was a normal season. So, I mean, it's one of those things. If they can't field a team, then you have to have those serious discussions that, you know, you can't just constantly bring try to call up players, because they're clearly, this was a team issue. This is how it was being run, that they couldn't control the outbreak once it got into the facility because of, you know, how it spreads and how close contact and close quarters everyone is in a team sport like hockey are. That's normally. I think, you know, you make a tough call, like awarding the points and shutting down, because at a certain point, it becomes more of a health issue. That what if one of the players who is on that team, what if they die because of COVID, or their life is altered because of COVID? You know, where does the responsibility lie at that point? Is it on the player? Is it on the team? Is it on the league for allowing them to continue to try to play and stay in those close quarters?
And you just really worry at the push. I understand the dollars. I understand the commitments to TV and so on to do this. But as you say, someone could die from this. Someone could have long haul issues that could play out, or even sooner have an issue from it. And we all say, is it worth it? And I know some people say, well, they make enough money. You know, that's money you can't buy life, right? You can't replace it. So interesting to see how this falls out. I think we're going to see some really scary stuff go on as they try to navigate through this. The Liberal government, guys, is proposing legislation that recognizes everyone in Canada has a right to a healthy environment. Environment and Climate Change Minister Jonathan Wilkins says the change is part of a package of changes and amendments to the Canadian Environmental Protection Act. Take a listen.
This is not symbolism. The legal right to a healthy environment will lead to stronger protections in tandem with the evolving science, especially for groups of people vulnerable to high levels of pollution who live downwind or downstream. This includes Canadians who may be at greater risk of exposure or more susceptible to the effects of chemicals.
Wilkins says the amendments also focus on how the country manages chemicals, so that's important. Ramya, we have talked about giving status to something that is like a river, but right now I'm kind of wondering, very briefly, if you could toss to me things like breathing issues and stuff like that, making this kind of thing more usable for us as citizens and thinking ahead and what we can use against companies that are our polluters.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Obviously, there are some serious things that we need to consider when it comes to how we're handling climate and just forestry, any kind of environmental thing that we're bringing up these days, because we're getting stats that we haven't focused on before. We're getting the kinds of feedback that we haven't focused on before just because, you know, nobody had time for it, seriously. And now we're hearing about it, which means we have to start thinking of what this means long term, because there's a lot of different issues.
Alex, we hear of people who have breathing issues and people not taking it much to a right, whether it's pollution from cars going by their homes. Briefly, any thoughts on this?
You know, I think that, as Remy said, we're hearing more about this now and it's becoming a bigger issue. I think, if anything, you know, you look at how the world dealt with COVID and the vaccine development, that within a year, we have a viable vaccine. So just innovation, effort, and work really can come together if you are focused and if it's at the priority at the standpoint. So I think that if you take a strong stance on environmentalism, if you really crack down on polluters and what is really the root cause, you can see great change at a very quick timetable.
I agree. Alex Smythe, TV reporter for AMI Toronto, joining us. Thanks a lot, pal. Appreciate it. We are going to take a break. That's the Thursday Roundtable. We'll do it again next week on the program. So thank you for joining us for it. Ramya will, of course, bait me for a slip question that we're going to be talking about next week. That won't happen, right? And we thank Alex again for being with us, folks. We'll take a break and tell you what's coming up tomorrow after this. Rogers Ignite customers can catch AMI audio on channel 146. And in Atlantic Canada, Eastlink customers, channel 887. Visit AMI.ca/schedules for a list of channel locations in your area in which you can enjoy listening to our programming here at AMI Audio. I'm Kelly McDonald, Ramya Muthan. Let's discuss a few of the segments you might want to shout out for people to go and check via the Kelly and Company podcast.
Okay, well, Mike Fair introduced us to journaling today, and this is week one of three that he'll be featuring some accessible journaling apps. And today he went with probably the biggest one you'll hear about, not just in the community, but just in the journaling world, with which is Day One. And he really highlighted it very well, Kels. You know, the free version, if you don't pay for a subscription, what you get in that. And if you do decide to subscribe to it, the kinds of perks you get with all of it. And it is quite great with accessibility. So if you want to get a recap, check out the podcast.
Awesome show in general, folks. I also will go near the top of the show in hour one. With Susan Kearney, our gardener, was here, as she is every 2 weeks on the program. And at this time, she was talking about things that we should think about when dealing with our turf. I learned a lot in this segment, found it very fascinating, some of the items she brought up. And again, it reflects on her time and having gardens and tending to them and doing the things that she's done. So there was a lot of really interesting information that you may want to go back, check out via the Kelly and Company podcast, available using your favorite podcatcher. I really thought what we learned about the plugs, for example, unplugging your lawn. You're maybe saying, what the heck? How do I unplug my lawn if you've never really thought about doing it? And her perspective on the watering and our good friends, the dandelions, too. So much to cover there. Also available via podcast, in case you can't catch their show live at 9 a.m. in the morning, is Now with Dave Brown. One of the producers joins us now, as he does through the week on the program. Paul Daniel, to give us an idea what their Friday show is all about. Hi, sir.
Hey, Kelly. Hey, Ramya. On tomorrow's show, the Friday news panel will discuss some of the big topics of the week, including the announcement by U.S. President Joe Biden to remove all U.S. troops from Afghanistan by the end of by September of this year. So we'll be discussing the legacy of America's longest war. Laurentian University has announced significant cuts to programs and staff while going through creditor protection. So we'll look at the take a look at the closer impact the impact of the post-secondary institutions on regions. And on a lighter note, our entertainment critic, Michael McNeely, will continue his predictions for the upcoming Academy Awards. Tomorrow he will preview his Oscar picks in the Best Documentary category.
It's amazing when you think about the time with Afghanistan and how many people, young people, are out there saying, geez, it's all been part of my life ever since I can remember. And you know, anyone probably 25, you know, up to 25, that's the way it feels for them. You know, people 30 and under, some of them probably barely remember a time before the battle in Afghanistan, Paul. So very interesting conversation. Interesting to see how things round up. Thanks a lot, pal.
Thank you, Kelly.
Paul Daniel, one of the producers, now with Dave Brown. Their show on at 9 a.m. in the morning. You can also download it as a podcast. Simply subscribe using your favorite podcatcher. And Ramya, we have our Friday show ahead. But boy, a busy show. Excellent job on the roundtable. Thanks for the fine words and comments.
Oh, thank you. You always bring such great gems to the roundtable, Kels. And, you know, anytime you want to let us know what some of those gems might be ahead of time, we're here to listen.
Well, let me check page 78 saying. In my contract. Just simply says roundtable. No.
Oh.
I think that means, no, I'm not supposed to help.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I think
contracts
people
can change.
People would call foul on that.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And I don't just mean foul ball as in baseball.
Okay.
We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Talk tomorrow.
Uber Eats has rolled out a new story feature and Instagram integration in Canada. John Beeler, he has an update on our app update about it. As the pandemic wanes, we'll learn more about some of the top Canadian travel destinations. Vacay.ca, they drop in to fill us in on that. A publisher has moved to putting audiobooks on a popular streaming platform, and Ryan Huey, he'll have the update on that. Also, Bill Shackleton, he's here for The Buzz. Producer Jeff Ryman will be here with the latest lifestyle headlines. And let's get to conversation recaps and comment on some of the segments from the past week on our Cut for Time segment. Whew, already Friday tomorrow. We're back starting at 2 p.m. Eastern. Hang in, folks. Late Edition is up next.
Hey guys, it's Jeff here, and I think it's safe to say that I am officially a cat dad. I'm currently looking down at my hands, and there's probably a good 6 or 7 scratches on each my left and right hand, all coming from the little bugger who I call Simon. Got him a couple of months ago. He just had his first birthday last weekend. So he's still learning. He's definitely evolved a lot. When we first got him, I think I mentioned to you guys on one of the shows that he would only be inside of the closet and he would not leave the closet in my office. Now he has no problem roaming around the entire house. He has no problem joining us, you know, in the evenings on the couch. And he has no problem jumping up on the bed at night. And one of his favorite things to do is attack our feet as our feet are underneath the blankets. He sees something move and he just has to pounce on it. I don't let him actually sleep with us because he'd probably keep us up all night. But I'm an official proud cat dad. I send probably an unnecessary amount of videos and pictures to my family and friends. I know my mom enjoys it. My friends are probably getting a little annoyed at how many pictures and videos I send to them via Snapchat. But what can I say? I'm a proud cat dad.
You've been listening to the complete Kelly and Company podcast experience.
The Real Deal airs weekdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast platform.